Hello and welcome to yet another video on the YouTube channel of Rethink Peer-to-Peer Kredite. My name is Danny Neithardt and today I'm joined with Twino Group CEO Anastasia Olejnica. Anastasia, thank you very much for taking some time and answering some of my as well as some of the community questions. Much appreciated that you take some time. First of all, you know, it's nice to get to know you in person, kind of, because we haven't had the chance to speak before. But there's a lot of discussion, a lot of points and a lot of topics on the table, which I would like to discuss with you. So thanks for taking some time. How are you doing personally? How's the situation in Latvia right now?
Yeah. Hi, Danny. It's my pleasure to be here today and then talk to you, even though we cannot really meet in person, considering the circumstances all around the world at the moment. So, thanks for asking. I'm doing well. I think considering the circumstances all around us, like the best thing we can do is be optimistic, both like in terms of business and personally. And that's where I try to stick to.
Yeah, perfect. I'm personally very thrilled to have a chat also with you in person. Now, obviously, you're the CEO of Twino for about, I think, almost 1.5 years. But I find it very interesting because Twino, obviously, on one side, is a very established non-banking lending company for many, many years. Had some sort of a rocky road recently in previous years, but I feel like ever since you joined the company, you know, there's really like an upside, you know, looking at the numbers and the development and the improvement on Twino's side. So I'm very curious to also touch base on some financial aspects in regards to Twino, but I guess we will come to that in a second. I have prepared a lot of topics, a lot of questions, so probably it's the best we start right into it. Maybe to start off, you can share a little bit about your
School of Economics here in Riga. Then I topped it off with the CFA charter in a few years after I graduated. In the meantime, I was working for several years at SEB M&A consulting branch here in Riga. So doing kind of boutique M&A consulting for local companies, fundraising, also debt raising, restructurings, and so on. And funny story, actually, that's how I met the founder of Twino, Armand Brox.
Armand, yeah.
Because we as a company, we were consulting Twino at that time. We were going, that was before Twino platform was created even. Twino Group in its previous form was doing consumer lending and they were looking for some additional capital. So I was leading the team that was doing fundraising. But like, you know, when the several deals were on the table, the shareholder decided not to take any of them. So that's how it never turned into Twino attracting external capital sources. But afterwards, actually, I got headhunted by a rather big consumer financing company operating across the globe called 4Finance Group. So I joined their financial department in the area of financial analysis and planning. My core focus was on understanding the products, understanding the numbers behind the products, seeing how they can work in the best potential way, how to tweak it for most profitability, and also big fundraising processes and communication with investors at that stage. And then after a few years there, then kind of my career at Twino started also as financial and planning head. You can ask questions or I can tell it all, whichever way is prepared. Then after some time I became a CFO. Then also due to some internal changes actually a colleague leaving on maternity, I became interim COO. Then also I had some interesting experience actually like substituting and leading operations in Russia for like almost half a year when we didn't have a country manager there. And just so we understand, Russia is the biggest, most complicated country that we have. And somehow slowly that led actually to the shareholder who is also a founder and previously was a CEO, him offering me to transition actually into a CEO position. So that's how I'm here.
Yeah, All right, excellent. Steep career, apparently, and
yeah, risky and steep. Yeah.
The next question follows up. Now, I wanted to ask you the time when you started at Twino. So I looked, I checked on your LinkedIn profile, and I saw like you joined Twino in March 2017. And as you said, back then it was your position was called Head of Group Financial Planning and Analysis. Now, obviously, you had with the founder and shareholder, with Armans, you had some contact before. Did he approach you saying, why don't you, you know, join us at Twino and start your career or, you know, continue your path actually, here with us?
Yeah.
Or how did how did this happen that you ended up at Twino, basically?
Actually, it wasn't the founder who approached me. It was the head of operations at that point, but also like a colleague that we met during this fundraising process. And to be honest, we had this negotiation of me joining Twino for more than 6 months, I think. Yeah, so it was a long process, and okay. It started and then it evolved from something different in the beginning to something. Completely different at the end. So initially it was, as you remember, there were good times for consumer lending companies before 2017. Yeah, so the kind of conversation was about how I'm going to join, I'm going to kind of travel, open new countries, acquire companies so that the Twino can maintain growth. And then actually regulation of 2017 in Georgia happened and in April when I was officially already joining, the situation in Twino was completely different. So it was a risky decision for me, leaving a stable, warm place and then, you know, big company in Ford Finance. It's huge actually group at the moment. They expected their valuation to be like close to unicorn kind of valuation. Yeah, so that was where the company was headed. There, I was also offered financial planning and analysis head position on the group level. So it was like the same position, but in a smaller company and in a company that was obviously getting prepared for really tough times ahead.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an easy decision, but luckily, I had my husband talk to me at home, and he said, like, come on, like, you're young, what are you going to lose? You can always go and work, like, you know, in a corporate position in a bank, yeah? So just try it and risk it. So that's what I did. It was rather tough reality. There were good things and there were bad things. Yeah. So as you know, Twino was but really startup-y company at that stage, which was great. Yeah. For me, it was like a breath of fresh air. So everybody who cared, and most of people cared, could influence how we were doing. Yeah, so there weren't glass ceilings, there wasn't bureaucracy. We were working as this huge motivated team to actually make things better and also like develop new projects. That was super cool. But in the background of all that, of course, was a financial instability, and the company at that stage was only beginning to comprehend how big of an impact from that can be on the company. Yeah? So we had to act really quickly. So I spent my first year actually just digging through the numbers, putting them all together, understanding where profitability is the highest, understanding how to like manage liquidity so that this huge part actually of our operation, so that the platform is stable and we're sure that we can kind of handle all of the needs of the investors. So that was a tough year.
Yeah. We get to that in 1 second. So basically, just to sum up, so you had some sort of mixed emotional feelings after long discussions and negotiations, then joining Twino, having the uncertainty how that transition would, you know, play out for you personally. Now, apparently, with that process of, you know, improving further and further, growing into that CFO position, now eventually being the CEO. How do you feel like that past 2.5 years have changed you personally? And how do you you're right. It's 3.5 years. is it like how do you deal with that, you know, additional responsibility that you have now as well? Do you feel like this is something that grew naturally now, or, you know, how do you feel personal in that environment right now, or in that position that you're in?
Yeah, well, it was hell of a ride. We have a saying at Twino that, you know, 1 year here is actually like 3 years elsewhere because everything is happening so quickly and changing so quickly. Taking on responsibility was never my issue. Yeah, so I'm like naturally this overly responsible person, just taking on more and more. I felt okay doing that in a sense, and probably like this kind of taking responsibility for everything, even the things that don't directly concern me, is actually the reason why kind of I managed to grow professionally so quickly. For me, the tougher part was to kind of preserve my personal qualities throughout the pressure, yeah, and to work with a team in a way so that they are not kind of just, you know, squeezed out quickly and then demotivated and burnt out. Yeah, so and that was something that took a while for me to learn, finally I feel that we are like more balanced in that sense. But you know, for people who are naturally like have high level of ownership, high level of responsibility, and like, you know, with this kind of I'll do everything I can and even more, it's sometimes tough to see that others are different and accept that. So that was more of my struggle rather than kind of the pressure of responsibility.
Okay, understood. Well, maybe we can shift, because you already touched base on let's say, the obstacles or the challenges in regards to the financial situation of Twino early on when you started there. Maybe just a quick recap. I mean, I feel like it was also a bit documented somehow through my channel, but obviously when you joined Twino in a time back then, 2017, you know, the company faced a lot of financial instability. So 2017, the company had negative equity with 6.5 million euro. You had loss generating businesses in 9 out of 11 subsidiaries back then. And it was like, I feel like ever since you joined that position, or ever since you joined Twino, you see like a step-by-step improvement. So 2019, for instance, you settled with all the company liabilities related to issued bonds. This year you used 7.2 million, I think, of your share capital that you used to cover like accrued losses during previous periods. And, you know, just like before we go too much into details, you know, how satisfied would you say are you as of this moment in general with the current restructuring process of the Twino company right now and of the financial situation, basically?
So just to give a bit of background, so before 2017, Twino was all about growth. Right. So it was not about so much reporting or keeping ratios stable or having like proper governance. It was all about growth, and that's okay for a startup. Yeah. So I think it could have been like an even better success story if several factors like during the beginning of 2017 didn't happen. So maybe Twino could have continued at that pace, actually, if we were a bit more lucky in a sense. But unfortunately, due to external circumstances and the company still being in that huge growth phase, you're absolutely right. So there, like this gap of profitability arised during 2017. Actually, we've spent the past few years working on bringing as much stability about, yeah. So the restructurings that you mentioned, also focusing on profitability, actually tuning down on growth a bit, yeah. Selling off the subsidiaries that weren't perspective or weren't profit generating. Also, sometimes making a decision to, you know, just cut the losses. So yeah, potentially like we can make profit in this market if we invest like 2 million more, but like, do we want to risk it and making a decision that we don't? So maybe also missing some opportunities. But I think what we have achieved as a result is stable operations with a significant equity buffer on which we can build upon to uncover the future growth opportunities. So this is much stronger position to grow from, and also like including the internal processes, the governance, the team distribution, decision making, and so on. So it's much stronger position to grow from than it would have been a few years ago. So I'm really satisfied with what we have done.
So you're happy with the position you're in at the moment. Now you said already a couple of words like about the process, how you got there, but maybe can you elaborate a bit on this point? So when you started at Twino, like you said also in the beginning, like where can we see profitability, you know, where can we optimize? Can you walk us a bit through the optimization or restructuring process, how it went, just like in broad steps, and how you set up the new structure basically and mm-hmm. your new outlook?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, it was a focus on what generates profit for us and how can we generate more profit, because sometimes the devil is in the details, right? You kind of if you understand your lending part perfectly, if you understand your product, you can see that actually like change of half a percentage point in one variable in one direction and like in another variable in another direction can make huge difference on your bottom line immediately. Yeah. So those were like quick gains to make, just making sure the kind of client economics and the product economics was clear to everybody involved, and that we had a strategy on how to improve it. And then when you kind of know what you need to improve, you can go forth and set up operational KPIs for the countries actually doing it. Yeah, so that was the first stage, like bringing profitability of the kind of good and stable products higher. Second was actually eliminating loss-making operations. Yeah, so we closed down operations in Mexico. Actually, like according to rumors, nobody has been able to make it big in Mexico till this day. So it probably was a good decision. Then we also sold our operations in Spain. That was kind of a 50-50 decision, but at that moment it was a right decision. Potentially we could have kind of earned more by risking more if we didn't sell Spain, but at that moment that was needed, absolutely, and just to strengthen our equity position. Then also we introduced a lot of kind of internal modeling in relation specifically to funds flows, because what Twino experienced before 2017 was huge liquidity. Like platform was booming, everybody wanted to invest in peer-to-peer, so like each month we were getting net positive deposits from the customers, and there was no very clear understanding in the company at that stage when I joined what will happen if the growth fails, right? So it was just, you know, like how do we repay that if investors want to take their money out? So that was the first thing actually that also I focused on. I asked the BI team to make automated models of what is happening with the lender's behavior, how it can go in each possible scenario. So just steady state scenario and also like worst case scenario. And based on that, to model on how we're gonna repay the platform investors. So it was my priority actually from day one to always be able to cater to liquidity needs of the investors, because peer-to-peer has been a huge accelerator behind growth of consumer lending companies, because historically especially we couldn't get funds anywhere else. Right, so the banks are not lending to us as their potential competitors. So destroying that goodwill with the investors would actually potentially mean destroying the future growth prospects. Yeah. So that I realized from day one, and that's why I focused on that. Mm. I hope that answered your question. Do you want more details on how many Excels and like this macros we built and so on? So it was huge work actually.
Yeah, no, to me it's just interesting as a more of a broad and a more global understanding about how you approach the restructuring. And obviously I think from what you said, it, from the outside perspective, I'm not a financial analyst in that sense, but to me it makes sense to understand, okay, where we're profitable, where can we grow, regarding like regulatory environments, and as you said, like those external circumstances. I think that's what you were referring to, as well as, okay, where can we cut losses? And let's go maybe into a bit more detail when it's about cutting losses. Now, I have reviewed the Zia Twino report for 2019 that was recently published. And I saw, just as you said, you decided to close some subsidiaries. And I saw that you also, you sold the claim rights from the subsidiaries in Georgia and Mexico and shifted them basically to Poland, to another subsidiary. Now, obviously, 2019, the mother company had a profit of 4.4 million, roundabout. And but a significant portion of that profit obviously came from that shift. So that was in total 6.8 million euro that came from that debt restructuring process. Now, obviously, without this one-off transaction, it would have been resulted into a negative net result for 2019. What I want to know is, obviously, it can be a legit move to do this, obviously, but has this been a cash-only transaction to maybe optimize profits in Poland, or partially at least, or can you talk about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So just giving like a bit wider background on this. So as I mentioned, like before 2017, like Twino was all about growth and startups. Then when I came in, the first thing that we focused on was operational profitability. Yeah, so making the operations profitable, but still not paying maybe so much attention on how at the end of the day it looks on the financial books. Because as you mentioned, you're not like from finance background, but so that you understand the operations and like where the profit sits at the end of the day is very complicated. So it's like for us to be able to offer the investors to acquire rights to repayments from the borrowers, we need to move the portfolio, right? So we first buy the portfolio from a daughter company to Zia Twino, and then investor can invest. And then there's also the buyback process when the daughter company buys back parts of delayed portfolio from Zia Twino. So all of that creates on statutory financial statements a bit of diversion from what we see as a full picture actually operationally. Yeah, so it historically has misaligned the risk and reward in that sense. So what we did as a result of this restructuring in 2019 and also continued in 2020 is like historically not enough attention was paid to making Zia Twino as a holding company profitable, right? So the daughter companies were profitable and the holding was generating like HQ costs and so on. Of course, like you can recharge the costs, but for that you need transfer pricing policies. You also kind of need to pay VAT, and in our industry, actually it's not so much fair because the service that we are providing is not VAT applicable. Yeah, so it's a complicated transaction on which you can incur extra costs unless it's done like completely right, and probably that was the reason why historically like the company just went the easy way and didn't really care how the holding company, how Zia Twino financials look like. What we did during 2019 is we actually made the alignment. Yeah, so historically the money that was lent to Georgia and Mexico came from Poland, because like Poland was one of the first successful markets in Zia Twino or in Twino groups, and it earned a lot of equity that was kind of later allocated to start operations in Georgia, Mexico, and also like other countries. But on the financial statements, it turned out that the losses from those operations, also as a result of these like assignment transactions, they appeared on Zia Twino balance sheet and not where they should have been, like where the money actually came from and where the risk should have been, which is like on Polish side. So what we did is we just like, you know, put the source of funds and the use of funds together where it should have been. And as a result, like now, Seat Vino operates and also looks like, from financial standpoint, as a proper holding company. And you mentioned that, like, without these one-off transactions, Seat Vino would have been kind of loss-generating. But it's still because historically there was, for example, some portfolio assigned to Seat Vino. Through this like assignment transaction and offered to the investors, and kind of it kept incurring provisions on the Seat Vino books. So, but now facing the regulation, what we have done is actually there will be no portfolio assignments to Seat Vino. It becomes like purely a holding company that is receiving dividends from its subsidiaries and that is recharging HQ costs to its subsidiaries. And is not bearing directly credit risks from the subsidiaries. So like 2019 was like a hybrid year in a sense, right? So we already stopped assigning part of the portfolios, and those that were assigned historically generated some loss. So that's why it looks loss making. But probably the proper way to look at it is actually I'm sure you were going to ask this anyway, but it's to look at our consolidated statements that we are going to issue in a matter of weeks. Yeah, so we're in final formatting stages at the moment, so that it looks pretty.
Yeah.
But yeah, and there you're going to see kind of the full picture on how Twino, together with its subsidiaries, performed in 2019. And it's like a positive result, and it actually eliminates these intergroup transactions. So it's not like we did a cash transaction and you know, inflated something. It's absolutely not about that. It's rather about shifting between the entities, but it is not making difference on the group level. Yeah, it's just aligns the transactions with how they historically should have been done.
Okay, thank you for
commenting. I'm not sure if this makes sense. Like.
I would leave it with this, like with your comment, and we can discuss it also afterwards. I would just, you wanted to hear your statement on this, and it's okay for me as of now. To me, one last part, yes, the consolidated report would have been another question then later on. So you answered this one already. I mean, it was a good history. I think in previous years, Twino also then delivered those reports always accordingly. To me, maybe to halfway close off the topic with Twino and the financial situation is like where you currently see the biggest financial challenges for the company, because I was also reading as a going concern from the auditing of your recent
that's not true. Listen, this is not true. Yeah, so don't tweak the facts. So okay. There are different ways of auditors expressing their remarks in financial statements. So one way is what you're mentioning, it's going concern statements, where auditors say they don't believe the company has a basis for going concern. Yeah. What we have is a remark from auditors in comments in relation of them doubting because of the reason X, Y, and Z. Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, the reasons there is the first one, which already, so it's not like going concern statements. It's not that. Yeah. Just like in financial world, to those who are watching and are familiar with audit procedures, so that you understand, it's more of like auditors covering a bit their risks in case something goes wrong. And they expressed this concern for two reasons. First one is, as you mentioned, and as I explained, that 2019 was this, you know, hybrid year where they also see that without these internal settlements, there would have been like negative profitability. And second, the concern that they state is that Seat Vino as an entity has like a liquidity coefficient dropping below one. And here, this is like another thing that is related to intragroup transactions. So if you look at it, I'm not sure like if from financial statements you can extract that, yeah, but for sure I can. So our creditors and debtors are our subsidiaries. Yeah, so meaning that our liquidity coefficient actually depends on how we structure the agreements. So there are different types of transactions with our like daughter companies with subsidiaries. Some of them are credit lines, and some of them are kind of liabilities or kind of debitors in relation to settlements for assigned customer loan portfolio, right? That one is short term. So, and it was kind of at the moment of financial statements, the situation was that we hadn't, changed probably some of those agreements, that would have been kind of the way to technically make it right. So to change some of these agreements from short term to a longer term agreements, where the kind of contingency of us repaying the daughter companies would have been more than 12 months. Like, and instead it's like on demand, because that's how the agreements are structured. But if you look at Twino's liquidity coefficient, excluding related parties, which we control and from which we kind of can draw liquidity, and that we also kind of showed very clearly as our advantage during COVID wave one. Probably we talk about that later. Yeah. So if we ignore intragroup debitors and creditors, actually the liquidity coefficient is above 1.3, I guess. Yeah. So it's which to me means that there is no liquidity risk. Because I control the subsidiaries, I can get money from them when needed. Yeah. So it's again like a question of the structure.
Okay, maybe you were running a bit over my mouth, because I just wanted to politely ask you, because I also checked just a couple of KPIs, and I also saw this when just putting together all the numbers, understanding, okay, how's the equity ratio, debt to equity ratio, liquidity. And I also saw that there was like for the short term liabilities have outweighed the short term assets. So just like as a normal fact, as a liquidity risk, you know, especially also considering, I know there was also a note that you made a dividend payment from a Polish subsidiary to balance this out, so that also the that basically also the auditor has something before signing off. Okay, it seems like this should be fine now, and it equals now, and the liquidity is given. But especially also regarding, you're right, I wanted to talk about this also later a bit, the COVID and the pandemic situation, to which extent especially a liquidity risk in a time where we have seen this year, some companies have really struggled also to keep up with promises of, you know, paying out withdrawal requests in time, to which extent is the liquidity risk really given? And that's why it was my question, like, what do you see as the biggest financial challenge as of now for Twino? Is it that liquidity? Is it something else? That was the extent of my question.
Yeah, actually, so the biggest challenge for sure is twofold. Liquidity is not part of it, because we have more than sufficient liquidity, and actually we are over liquid at the moment, because after like COVID wave one, we started lending more cautiously in order to free up that liquidity, and now it takes time to allocate it back to the lending portfolio, just because we are not going to be lending recklessly, and then there's some competition in the lending markets, and we are not ready to pay for customer acquisition huge money, knowing that it's going to bring us unprofitable client economics. So we are kind of going cautiously into like putting that liquidity back in operations. At the moment, there's like a lot of liquidity, and actually we're thinking of like how best to allocate it, not to be paying for excess liquidity at the moment. But now with COVID, I'd say that potential risks are twofold. So first is how long the lockdowns are going to continue, and whether it's going to affect portfolio quality. Yeah. As we saw during COVID wave one, actually, like, it's funny, but we were drawing up prognosis on how it's going to be, and it actually was a bit better than expected, but followed very similar pattern that, you know, in the first month after lockdown, like, the borrowers become cautious, they start delaying a bit. And then when they understand that it's not that bad, and that their job is still out there waiting for them as soon as lockdown kind of ceases, then they start paying again. So In this case, I would be a bit more cautious about whether like this second wave and repeated lockdown is not going to trigger economic downturn and of what extent it's going to be. I wouldn't say that this is like definitely a bad thing for a consumer lending company, because like economic downturn also means in a sense that banks will be lending more cautiously, that we will get access to a better customer at the end of the day. But it's just, you know, a risk that we have to be careful about and that we have to manage, which we are doing also. We're monitoring not just, you know, the existing portfolio and how it comes into delay already on the first and fifth date after due date. And we're monitoring that actually on a daily basis. But also we're monitoring the kind of leading indicators where we have analyzed which factors are leading up to the worsening of the portfolio quality, and which led to this, like in the first COVID wave, and we have threshold values, and we're very carefully kind of making lending decisions, not to for this not to impact our financial situation, but this also means kind of the slow allocation of liquidity back to the operation. So there's some money that is not working for us at the moment. And second risk is Forex, actually. Yeah. So it's like we have a rather big exposure to Russian ruble. Like each year, you know, around budgeting in November, December, we sit down, look at how much it costs to hedge and decide not to, actually. Yeah. We have saved quite a lot of money on this historically, and this year it all came back to us. Yeah, so we had to. It's still unrealized losses, right? And they are going to stay unrealized until we pay out dividends or settle internal transactions. And now there is absolutely no need to do it. But the question is, like the long-term forecast from what I've seen and what I want to believe is that, you know, ruble historically has followed oil prices, and based on that, like the kind of mean ruble value should be somewhere around 80 to 82 rubles per euro. At the moment, it's like 90 to 91. Now the question is whether to hedge and lose out on that opportunity to regain some of that kind of money that's potentially a loss or not. So we're looking at different opportunities. So both hedges and also local borrowing to be able to at least partially offset potential effects in the future. But saying all that, at the same time, the important thing is that we have, as I already mentioned previously, a very significant equity buffer. And I believe that there is no reason to talk about like potential instability. It's more of a question on depending on these factors, how quick we are going to be able to grow in the future and realize actually our growth plans.
Mm. Okay. Two points that are very interesting that I also had on the schedule for later on, once the pandemic a bit closer, as well as the situation in Russia. Now I say we shift a little bit. Now we're moving to the pandemic situation. I saw also in the report that you had like substantial cash withdrawals earlier this year in March and April. I think that amounted to 4.2 million euro, where more money was taken away from Torino rather than received cash funds. In May, it stabilized already a bit, and June, and then consequently got better and better with each and every month. Now, when you're looking back at the situation, you said like you're not that concerned about the liquidity situation. But to be very, maybe you can give an honest answer, how frightening was the situation back then for you looking at Torino, at the numbers? And has there been maybe at some point, you know, some sort of a point of discussion, you know, is it maybe sensible, you know, to somehow slow down the withdrawal requests and maybe, you know, put a bit more ease at the financial immediate liquidity situation of Torino? What can you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember, I think it was also Friday 13th, so it was March 13th, which was the day that Latvia went into lockdown, and we realized what we are facing, actually, because before that, it was like nobody was believing, really, that something like this can happen. Of course, we talked about this. We talked about different scenarios. But as I mentioned already before, I'm a strong believer into the goodwill that both the peer-to-peer industry, now compared to crowdfunding industry, but the industry and also Twino has in the eyes of the investors. So we were unanimous in the management team that we are going to prioritize investor repayments in almost any scenario. But of course, the other part that we need to think about, and we did and we calculated, what is the minimum threshold of investor portfolio that we need in order for this not to be a full rundown scenario? Because at some point, you know, your operations and portfolio become so small that it's almost impossible to come back from that level. That all was significantly below the kind of where we got during COVID wave one. I think, like, just to put the number on it, so in March and in April, investors were withdrawing approximately 30% of their repayments. Yeah, so they would have needed to withdraw like 100% for like 1.5 months for us to get there and to actually take another look at this decision. But then again, like the things that we are discussing wasn't, you know, issuing some kind of statement to the investors and saying that we are not going to pay you back whatever you want to withdraw. It was more of looking country by country, portfolio by portfolio. And for example, if in some country the government says to the borrowers that now you can, you know, not pay for 6 months, only something like this would have been legit enough reason for us to kind of not even pause withdrawals, but put repayments on hold if we weren't getting them. But while we are getting repayments, not paying out to the investors just because, you know, it wouldn't be good for our growth, that was never on the table. And we actually saw the positive effect of that. Yeah? So you're saying that the growth resumed, and I believe that was exactly the reason. I hope that you will not find any negative comment about Twino delaying withdrawals, because we did not. We pulled all the cash together. And now what we see also with the second wave starting, investors are very calm about the situation. Yeah, I think both because globally everybody is a bit more relaxed this time, but I believe that also like how peer-to-peer industry went through the first wave and actually paid the investors is also a factor in that.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. But you never know, you know, what eventually can happen. You know, although we got some good information in terms of the vaccines now recently, but let's see how it plays out. And maybe also, like, as a consequence, as you said, like economic downturn, how that maybe comes into force then in the upcoming months, who knows. Another aspect regarding the financial situation I wanted to discuss with you a bit about crowdfunding. Obviously, in the past 12 months, it became kind of quite popular among non-bank lending companies to raise money also via equity crowdfunding. Neo Finance, we had Asset Guru this year, and now recently also Mintos, just to name a few here. How is it with Twino? Are you, or would you consider also going this step and this road with Twino as well?
The funny thing, when Mintos came out with their announcement, we were all laughing here, because this is something that we had discussed like more than 3 years ago, like, to be honest, like, well, how about we issue our own shares to our own investors? That would be a great idea, right? So gather up liquidity. There was also the question of how best to structure it for the investors actually to benefit from what? From liquidity, from potential dividends, from increase in value. So So it's a question, right? So which investors would like to invest and for what reason? But I see that the feedback from the market on the Mintos case seems to be positive. So we'll wait and see how it goes. So of course we have looked into that. What we have decided each time though is that, you know, you need a good solid story behind raising additional equity. Yeah. So where it's going to be used and how you are going to actually communicate in the future that your equity raise was successful and brought you these and these results. Because if you fail at your first round, or you like raise the equity and then you kind of don't show return on that properly to the investors, then you're somewhat blocked from future capital raises. And I think this is an important factor to consider. So you need to have a really strong need and really a strong story behind minor equity raises. Yeah, because they set you up. Yeah, of course, you kind of show beautiful valuation, but let's wait and see how long in this world the valuation without fundamentals is going to actually persist. Because, like, you know, from finance theory, it should. It's just a bubble, right?
Yeah. Okay. So second question to me is like what are the requirements for Twino to go that way? Obviously you said now you need a good story and there needs to be some sort of solid background, what you're going to do with that money. What will be the advantage for Twino going that road instead of just raising venture capital instead?
So comparing a lot of minor shareholders with several venture capital funds that are actually making business on this is like a completely two different worlds. So crowdfunding is an easy way to get money and not really be too accountable for it. But it depends on the consciousness of each organization, of course, right? But you know that when you're onboarding a venture fund, you actually are getting into a lot of additional reporting and a lot of kind of additional opinion that may or may not benefit you. So speaking about venture funds, the only way I see it is going for smart money. Yeah? So for some fund that can actually help you with their expertise. Otherwise, if you are not in desperate need of cash for growth, it's not a good way, in my opinion, because it takes away that angle of being flexible and being able to move fast and not having bureaucracy, and adds additional layer of expenses. So in that sense, crowdfunding is definitely easier.
Okay. But as of this moment, it's not something that is really on the table at Twino.
No, not really. So I'm not sure, like, it's a different topic completely, but if you or your followers are reading Merger Market, then we actually have come out with a statement about potentially capital raise. As a part of that, if that is successful, we may decide to issue part of that capital raise in the form of crowdfunding to minor retail investors. Yeah, okay. But that's like not decided yet. We are at the moment just trying to understand how the market looks and whether we would be able to fundraise on the terms that are appealing to us, because there is no kind of strong need. We can grow on our own, but we could grow quicker if we fundraise.
Okay. I want to quickly discuss with you the topic business loans versus consumer loans. Obviously, this year, Twino has launched Twino Ventures, and you started to dig more and more into the business loans section. Coming from a background being like solely focused on consumer lending, do you see this SME lending being a necessity and a necessary part for future growth of Twino, especially because early on you also said those like their external circumstances, kind of referring to regulation, which kind of made you rethink stuff or your organization in Georgia. I think also Russia is obviously affected now. So how do you think about business loans becoming a necessary part for Twino in the future to maintain and fuel that growth in the future?
Of course, knowing how consumer lending industry can shift rather quickly, it's our core priority to diversify at this moment. And when I'm speaking like about future growth, I'm of course speaking about diversification more than growth in our existing markets. Both geographic diversification and product diversification. Part of that was already this first step into SME lending. And also, like, if you look at ventures, there's also like a real estate project lending. That is a less marginal business. Yeah, but the good part about that is that in a lot of countries, SMEs are actually underserved from the banks. And there we see a kind of big opportunity if we make our product right to serve kind of this market segment, and not just with loans, yeah, potentially also in the future by offering them other financial products such as factoring, invoice financing, maybe cards and so on. But the issue here is that this also is kind of an important part of all this, is that with the cost of funds at 10%+, which is what peer-to-peer investor expects at the moment, there is a very thin margin. Yeah, in this area, because like companies would like to borrow at 8% to 10%. That's a good price. But if investors are funding those loans at 10%+, then it's kind of not working so much as a segment. So what I'd see is that first of all, what we need to do in order to enable that part of the business to grow is to diversify our funding sources. And there are actually some international banks that are willing to take on exposure to these kinds of loans. But for that, we initially need to kind of grow our portfolio, and then that portfolio serves as a collateral to this kind of cheaper bank funding or institutional funding. Yeah. And the second one is actually through the regulation. And after the regulation, I would expect that rates on peer-to-peer investments go down. Yeah, so that's something that investors will not like to hear. But like, to be honest, they are very high for the level of risk that the investors are exposed to, especially in the case of Twino. And we have been approached by several financial brokers begging us to kind of let their customers invest into the kind of securities that would be kind of the peer-to-peer loans, because it's a unique investment available in the market at the moment at high rates and rather high security. Yeah, so it's a unique situation, and I hope that the rates are going to go down. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to just follow up with one more question in that area of that we're discussing now. Obviously, you said like there's smaller margins, you know, when you're going more into business loans, and it's very hard to maintain like a double-digit return also then at the same time for investors. In general, what do you say about the risk-return ratio compared to consumer loans? Because obviously, you know, I think it's also requiring a different kind of skill, maybe, so to say, for acquiring those business loans. It's obviously a lot more about quality. And now we have seen your close partner by SMS Group. Now they have done a pre or like, how do you say this? An early exit, basically, on their first business loan, that student hall project in Barcelona. Now, how do you see this kind of risk return ratio and acquiring projects on the business side? Maybe you can say a couple words here as well.
Yeah, so it definitely requires a different setup of operations, just because like in consumer loans, it's a lot of micro loans, and we are actually getting diversification within our own portfolio. We can lend based on, you know, numbers, yeah. So it's like in a lot of cases the distribution is going to be approximately like this. With business loans, it's much more tailored approach to each borrower. Yeah, so it's important for us to analyze their cash flows, and that also is part of what eats away the profitability. So it's much more operationally heavy. Mm-hmm. It takes more time, as you mentioned, to acquire the potential customer. There, of course, still are different acquisition channels and partners through which to do the acquisition. But it's not direct marketing where you just, you know, digitally pay for the click or for loan issuance. So it's a more complicated process where you need to invest more upfront, and you also need a bigger operational capacity. So in that sense, risk return coefficient, I'd say, is like for us, at least as like primary lender and somebody who is responsible with their guarantee for the final outcome, it's worse. But if you take into account that, as you also already mentioned, the potential regulatory pressures in relation to consumers, then business loans are never going to be that regulated, because as long as there is kind of demand from the business and supply from another business, that's okay, that's a market transaction. So that is definitely a good way to diversify and also to kind of grow and maintain profitability in the long term. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, I'm sure you have some sort of like also forecasts. Now, I think also this week, I think it was this week when Twino also announced a new project now for Twino Ventures. How do you forecast, how do you project both credit types moving forward in the future? So to which extent will business loans also, you know, compare to consumer loans in terms of the funding volume in the future? Can you share some insights on this?
Speaking about how it's going to develop in the future, so from the perspective of the kind of monthly funding, I believe that still consumer loans are going to dominate, because like for each SME loan and for each real estate project, it takes time to find such. Also to understand the business case first for us, because we're still kind of either giving guarantee, or for some real estate projects we intend to give the mortgage to the investors. Yeah, so it takes much more time. But in terms of total portfolio volume available, just because consumer loans are shorter in terms of maturity and kind of SME loans and real estate loans are longer, yeah. I believe that it can kind of should sometime in the future switch more towards the business loans.
Okay, but in which ratio you can't define?
Not at the moment. It's well, you know, it's like we don't have a target, let's fund five real estate projects per month. We have a target, let's find real estate projects with IRR above 20%, let's say, and then let's see whether we believe in them and whether we can fund them. So it it's for us, it's not, you know, a growth or volume based business. For us it's profitability first, and then we see within like kind of defined profitability needs how quickly we can grow.
Yeah,
so unfortunately no, I cannot give you a ratio.
Then what I would like to discuss also with you is like we touched base on this prior, the your exposure in Russia. Obviously I saw from, I think it's about 3/4 of your investments that came in through the Russian subsidiaries in 2018. So very high exposure, high dependency then obviously. Now the question to me is, with new regulation coming into force, new amendments last year, which resulted in cap of total credit costs as well as effective interest rate cap at 365%. How do you... Yeah, look at the situation right now in Russia. I guess you have adjusted your lending product accordingly to some sort of more credit line way. Is that correct? Or
no, you didn't? No. So, no. So in terms of exposure to Russia, if you look at the funded volumes, then you're right. It is a big number. But if you look from the perspective of portfolio, then it's actually like less than half of the portfolio funded on the platform is from Russia. It's more like 30-something percent. At the moment. So in that sense, the exposure is not that big. So speaking about the regulatory changes, so in Russia, there were two waves of regulation last year, one in February and then another one from 1st of July. Funny thing is that at the moment, we are more profitable in Russia than we were before the regulation. And several reasons for that. Yeah. So first of all, regulation always means higher requirements for compliance, higher requirements for the companies operating. So part of our competitors left. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gives us more space to attract better quality customers and also to attract them at a lower cost potentially. And in a sense of like speaking about future regulation, actually, I like regulatory environment in Russia a lot because it's reasonable. So there is like central bank in charge. They are like financial regulator. It's not like, you know, somebody responsible for consumer rights, but who does not care of the structure of the financial market. It's a central bank. They understand what role non-bank lenders are playing, what share they are actually kind of taking of the whole financial market, and they understand the importance of the sector. And that is why I believe that any further regulation is also going to be reasonable. Yeah, because the regulator is aware of what would happen with the market if they just kind of closed it down.
Hmm. Okay. Obviously, it's a statement that you would assume, or that you would rarely hear from someone, you know, following up with a consumer lending business. But I pretty much agree, as long as it's a sensible regulation that also protects customers, you know, there's nothing against to say. Obviously, this reduces a bit the market, but nice to hear that apparently the profitability now even increased for Twino in Russia. Okay, then I also can leave out on the question, because you said already what's going to happen now even with further regulation, because I also heard that, you know, it's potentially even tightening up. But I think that's something that we can discuss once we reach that point.
Yeah. So at the moment, no specific date, only rumors. And the only thing that we've kind of heard and in those propositions is that to decrease the daily rate from 1% to 0.8%. But that's okay as well, because we're slowly kind of migrating also into short installments in Russia. So again, to diversify our product base.
Hmm. Okay, then let's discuss the expansion in Asia, as well as your collaboration with your dear partner via SMS Group. Can shift in just a quick community question. Someone forwarded the question, how happy are you in general with your collaboration with via SMS Group at the moment?
Well, it's important to understand the key reason behind the collaboration, and we agreed that this is a good way to go 50-50 into actually two Asian markets to diversify the risk. Yeah, so it's like either each of us goes into one market, or together we go into two markets. Funding is the same, risk is smaller, and potential for kind of growth is still sufficient, right? And in that sense, it's a great cooperation. We also were able to learn from this cooperation a lot, and I think via SMS were able to learn a lot, and we are still in the learning process, because like each organization works differently, it's a way to actually probably like get some good practices and see if we can do even better in other markets.
Hmm. And how's the learning experience so far? How happy are you with the expansion so far in Southeast Asia?
Well, you know, COVID kind of changed our plans a bit, to be honest, right? So according to the initial business plan, we would be a bit further at the moment in terms of like the portfolio size and like the client economics. But still, I think considering the circumstances, it's going well, we are catching up slowly to those initial plans.
Mm. All right. And how is the intention in terms of also offering retail investors to invest into those consumer loans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely on the table. What we want to make sure of first is that, again, since we are giving the guarantee, we don't really want our investors to see a lot of delayed loans in their portfolio. So we will wait on our side for kind of the performance to improve a bit further, and then start slowly selecting which loans to actually offer to the investors. So that will come within 2021 for sure.
All right. And we can look forward to that. Another thing to look forward is obviously the long-awaited peer-to-peer legislation in Latvia. How do you personally feel about the upcoming legislation? Also, you know, considering that this year we had some, let's say, the reveal of some fraudulent or some scam platforms, especially also from Latvia or in the Baltics in this year. How are you looking towards this new legislation?
Okay, important to separate. Fraud cases were in crowdfunding, not in peer-to-peer. Yeah, so peer-to-peer has been doing rather well. And the difference is that actually in crowdfunding, investors are just giving money to some enterprise and expecting it back with interest. With peer-to-peer, it's that investors are acquiring rights to cash flows from a portfolio of loans. Yeah, so it's different. There is actually like some security in that. Then in terms of regulation, so crowdfunding regulation is being developed on the European level. Some countries are already kind of issuing crowdfunding licenses, but at the end of the day, all of those will have to align with the final way the European Parliament kind of decides to approve this regulation. But peer-to-peer operations are not included in the crowdfunding regulation. And as a result, there is not going to be a separate peer-to-peer regulation. And in Latvia, it's not going to be as well. It's a bit different approach from our regulator. So they said that essentially we are offering investment product to our investors. So we should license as an investment brokerage. That covers actually two key concerns of the regulator, one of which is AML and like us being accountable for AML procedures being like as tough as they are for the bank, for any bank, yeah. And then second is MiFID regulation, which concerns investor protection. So we also will have to comply with investor onboarding process, and we will be able to offer financial instruments only to such investors to whom they're suitable, which means that if you are a student and then you don't have a salary and you don't have savings, you cannot invest, I don't know, your 5k euro into risky investment or like even peer-to-peer loans. So that is something that we will have to comply with. In general, as I mentioned, I think this is a good trend. This is going to ensure more transparency in the market, and it's also going to ensure higher barriers to entry, which at the end of the day should help us protect the integrity of the industry and also, like the before mentioned, goodwill in the eyes of investors, because now like everyone can make a peer-to-peer platform and it can be fraud and they're accountable to nobody. After the regulation happens, it's actually not going to be possible, which is good for the existing market participants who are willing and also like in the process of regulation already. And what I hope, but again, it's like my personal hope is that interest rates are gonna go down at least slightly.
Mm. Okay, in order to get a better margin for the platform itself?
Not for the platform itself, but in order to be able to expand into additional lending segments and offer to the investors more diversified opportunities to invest also in the segments that are not able to absorb such high cost of capital. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the aforementioned SMEs, for example.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for explaining also again the differences like in the process, because I think somehow or sometimes it gets mixed the regulation on crowdfunding level and with the European strife, and on one side what's happening on a national level, as you nicely explained with the Latvian regulator FCMC, which is pushing forward this investment brokerage firm license for peer-to-peer lending companies. I was curious, I saw that you're also, or that Twino's also in some sort of association, some alternative finance services that is also, yeah, you know, very closely connected to the Latvian Ministry of Finance. I was curious to which extent can you also kind of actively shape this legislation that is about to happen then in Latvia? And how's the communication in general? How often do you talk, and to which extent can you bring in your ideas and what you find beneficial for that new governing?
There's actually no legislation happening in Latvia in relation to peer-to-peer. So it's just the existing players being asked to get an existing license of investment brokerage. Yeah. So just a disclaimer. But yeah. Otherwise, we are part of the association. The association represents not just the kind of investment part of the industry, but also non-bank lenders. And since there are more of those, that part of the association usually kind of dominates with their matters and their questions. Yet it's important to note that we are working together also with other industry players at the moment, and through association and also through discussions with the regulatory bodies, shaping both the kind of laws that are going to be applicable to us once we get a license, and also kind of what I wanted to say. so not just laws, but also interpretations of the existing laws, because there are like questions such as, for example, this is going to be a financial instrument, and then there is interest cost on financial instrument. How it's going to be taxed? Is it treated as a bond, as a public bond, because it's going to be kind of publicly issued and publicly listed? Or is it going to be treated as some private financial instrument from tax perspective? And these are questions very important to us, right? And also to our investors. So we are working on those matters, explaining to the regulatory bodies what actually we are going to do, how it compares to one financial instrument, how it compares to the other, and constantly being in the dialogue with the government bodies and also among the players, among other platforms, in order to have a common understanding and then common ground on how we're going to operate.
Yeah. Okay. We're coming to an end of this interview. There's just two more questions left. The first one, a community question that may seem a bit bold on the first look, but it maybe offers you a good opportunity to give a little pitch on Twino. It maybe goes into a bit of a philosophical area as well. He was asking, how's Twino different from other peer-to-peer platforms? What would you say?
We control our cash. You saw it during COVID. This is easy. Right. So in terms of peer-to-peer platforms, we're definitely the largest that is offering investors investments from the same group of companies. And the guarantee is actually from the parent company and from the whole group. So I'd say that our investments are much more secure in that sense.
Okay. And last questions from my side. What are the things to look out for at Twino or in 2021?
Yeah, a lot of things actually. So, but the key is, as I already mentioned, so it's diversification, both in terms of the investment products that we offer to our investors. So there's going to be more ventures, more different projects and business loans. Also some new products in terms of lending. And then on the investment side, actually at the moment we are exploring a possibility, since we are going to become a licensed brokerage, is to offer to our investors something more than just peer-to-peer investments and venture investments. Yeah, so we will see what the offering will be and when it's going to go live. But at the moment we're exploring and putting together a potential roadmap.
All right. Many things to look out for in 2021. Anastasia, thank you very much for taking some time and answering my questions. Very insightful. And thanks again. And looking forward that we catch up then hopefully also next year.
Okay. Thank you very much, Denny.